This is the Everything EV Podcast by EV Powered.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Everything EV Podcast, a weekly show that brings you the latest news, views and opinions from every corner of the EV industry. I'm your host, Charlie Atkinson, and in these episodes we'll be discussing everything to do with electric travel, so whether it be cars, bikes, boats or even planes, we'll have it covered. We'll also be speaking to people from within the industry to get their views on the EV space, as well as other features such as electric car reviews, electric motorsport coverage, and much, much more along the way. This podcast is available on all streaming platforms, so be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to receive every single episode as soon as it's released. And please do go back and check out all our other episodes too. This week, I chat with Peter Swain, the founder of RBW Electric Classic Cars. Since its inception, RBW has evolved from a classic car restoration company into a manufacturer of electric vehicles with designs inspired by iconic cars of the past. Earlier this year, RBW opened its new multi-million pound factory in Lichfield, and so I spoke to Peter about the growth of the company, his plans for the future, and his thoughts on the wider EV space. Peter, thanks for taking the time to chat with us, and thanks for coming on the Everything EV podcast, first of all. Now, I just want to start at the very beginning of the RBW journey, really, and sort of get an insight into your background, the inspiration behind the company, and where this whole sort of journey began.
Yes, well, thank you for the invite. RBW, family business. The clues in the name, R for Rose, B for Becky, and W for Wesley, for my three children. I was in the electronics business before, and I left that industry in 2015. I was fortunate that industry allowed me to buy lots of nice cars in the past. So I started just dealing in classic cars with a workshop, improving them, just as a hobby business, and approaching 50, and it went well. We then went on a trip to Bath, or Bath if you're from Birmingham like me, with my wife in an MG, and it was my wife that actually said, "Look, everyone loves your cars, because they do. We'd pull up at, in the Cotswolds where we were on the way, and people crowd round, especially some Americans." She says, "But I can't drive it, and they can't, it's old, it's difficult to drive." That was a 67. She said, "Can't you do me a modern one?" And then she said these famous words, "Can you not do me an electric one?" And that got me thinking. And here we are now, sort of 6 or 7 years later, but we've done it in a different way to the conversion market. So just to be very clear at the start of this, our vehicles are brand new vehicles into brand new body shells, all DV tested. It took us 5 years to come to market with all the testing and compliance, our suspension, our patented drive systems, our batteries are all OEM. And we have a modern class looking classic vehicle which has Apple AirPlay. That's always amuses me now. Our clients always ask if you've got Apple AirPlay first. Electric windows, power steering, aircon, you name it. It's a classic looking vehicle on a modern platform. So we've married the beauty but with modern technology. And that's not the work of a moment. That's taken us many, many years, not just to hone in on the quality, but also the safety and the safety case. What troubles me in EV with some of the classic EVs I see is there's lots of experts out there, but we can see corners have been cut, and we don't want to do that. So that journey started with me engaging with Continental Engineering Services, who were part of Continental AG at the time, $48 billion company. And bringing in their experts. So I'm not the expert. I have the idea. I pay the experts. But we've arrived at a position now in our business. We've opened our new factory. I'll walk you around in a minute in October. And now I've got an incredible tech team, managing director, who have all been in EV for over 20 years. I haven't. So I'm not an expert, but know what I want to achieve.
Yeah, I just want to come back to when you mentioned how you said that you're not an EV conversion company. And I'll be completely honest, RBW has been on my radar, and I've seen things on LinkedIn for the last couple of years now. And I did always think that this was an EV conversion company. But what was the inspiration, or what was the thinking behind not going down that route and making a new authentic vehicle? What was the sort of deciding factor between going that way instead of the other way?
Well, I have to say at the start, one of my investors, I'm blessed with some investors who are friends, who believed in me in previous adventures I've been on. We sat down and said, with Continental, and we'd already engaged, and we arrived at a decision, if we're going to do it, we've got to do it properly, you know? So we have a safety loop induction system. We have 1,874 quality documents before we could release a vehicle with every component tested. But if you roll that back, why conversion and why new? The components for conversion and the components for a new vehicle are basically the same value. You're using the same components for that element of it. But then you're going to, with a conversion, you've got an old body shell, and the amount of hours and time to prepare that body shell and make sure it's strong and to, you know, get the vehicle into a standard to take the EV is probably five times longer than me taking a brand new body shell. But yes, the other side of it is also, we have a fundamental problem in the UK with the IVA system. So we have people putting electric systems in, but they have to comply with the IVA, so an individual voluntary test. So the DVLA, you can keep that number plate, and that system doesn't lend itself to good EV vehicles. It means you have to keep the same steering rack, the same brakes, the same suspension. Well, you're putting a lot more torque and power in them now, and those cars shouldn't have that old architecture in it. So when you actually look at it logically, conversions to us, because of the rules, can be dangerous, because you're putting a lot of power into an old vehicle and relying on some very old stuff in there that you have to keep the point system, to keep the registration. So when we did that analysis at the start, it was either do it properly or we're not going to do it at all. And that's really the answer you're looking for. We weren't going to put more powerful than the original vehicles into a conversion unless we could do it in a very specific way. And we've done it with a specific way, with an incredible frame system we have to hold the motor at the rear of the vehicle. That's patented UK, Europe and US. And that frame system holds the motor, the suspension and the braking. That's built off vehicle and bolts in. But what that does, that frame takes 90% of the torque reaction. So the frame does the work. You're sitting the vehicle on top of that frame. Whereas our competitors, again, to meet standards, they put electric motors straight into vehicles. There's no torque reaction straight where the motor was or however they put it. That body twists. And to us, that's not an ethical or correct way to build a vehicle. You know, and you're letting your clients, I think, on a conversion, unless you've been down a very specific testing path, they become your test mules. And we're not about that. So we built five cars before we came to market. We've been at Myra, you know, doing all the full testing. We had to get sign off for Reg 100. We've done all we could do to meet the standards to say we're a safe vehicle, you know, manufacturer. Conversions are a different animal.
Yeah. And the fact that these vehicles are electric, you mentioned in one of your previous answers that it was your wife's idea, but she said, oh, why don't you make these electric? I'm curious to find out your sort of outlook on electric vehicles before this venture, because obviously, speaking to you, I get the idea that you are a big fan of your classic cars, and obviously I know you're not a conversion company, but when the debate over EV conversions is that a lot of old school petrol heads, if you like, think they're sacrilegious and whatnot. So what was your sort of perspective on the electric vehicle industry before you went down this route?
Well, don't forget, 7 years ago I was the biggest idiot in the country. Because I was going, you know, I think there's me and Muggy who was doing, because there wasn't many companies around when we started doing what we were doing. I think let's just differentiate what we're doing here. What car was I driving as my daily drive when I started this business? It was a Maserati Gran Turismo S. You couldn't get further than an Eco Warrior than that vehicle. Why did I have that? Because I love the sound. What did I have in the garage? A V8 MGB GT and some other V8s. Love it. Absolutely love it. Car mad. Absolutely car mad. My perspective on an electric then was a bit quirky, a bit niche. You know, Tesla was back then. You know, I remember sitting with Continental and them saying, oh, well, Tesla, you know, you need to see and see, well, now it's worth more than Mercedes, Volkswagen and BMW put together. So we came in at the right time, but it was a bit of a niche market. I liked it because I could see a future. And I like the entrepreneurship side, the patents. I actually designed them in my name. So I got into the engineering side of it. And once you get wedded to the engineering, it becomes a real project. And it took me into it more. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about what not to do. So you shouldn't really put a gearbox. You know, people are trying to put gearbox on conversions with an electric car. It's not where you need to be. It's not good engineering. You know, do it because the client wants a gear stick, or, you know, he doesn't, he shouldn't have one. So, but my take on EV is a bit like everybody else. The world's changing, you know. I think up until the BMW M50 electric vehicle, I think that's a stunning car. It's so that, but that gives people association from their M series petrol BMW. They can say now see an M50, they can see the transfer. I can say it's a lot quicker. But like everybody else, I don't have a stock answer. EV's evolving. The one thing I will tell you, once you go EV, you never go back. You just can't go back. It's impossible. You plug, play, quiet, just works. You know, I drive a Tesla daily drive. I just couldn't go back. I drive a Mercedes van sometimes. And that's it's only 4 years old. It's like going back in time. When I get back in a proper classic car, the gap's too big, hence the market for the classic EVs.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because when you compare the sort of the classic EVs and the classic cars to the modern EVs, I'm always fascinated that the difference in the quality of the design is so stark. Because I mean, I work for electric vehicles. I'm probably the biggest advocate of electric vehicles you can get with my work, but. I mean, a lot of the new EVs that come to market, they are guilty of being a little bit boring and a little bit conventional. So I suppose the work you're doing now opens the door to more sort of interesting designs, more classic designs, which makes the whole EV market much more engaging, doesn't it?
Yeah, but don't fall in the trap of what there's a big trap here for anybody listening, you know, etc. And if anyone wants to talk to me direct, they can. There's a huge trap that no one talks about anymore, and it's a big failure in the industry. So it's not just about being EV, it's about driver engagement. If you get in one of my cars, and you can go on the internet and look at anyone from James May or all the different people who've driven our cars, we have a rear-wheel drive electric vehicle with instant torque. We put the batteries where the engine and gearbox were, and we've created a 50-50 weight distribution, okay? We do not build the fastest EV in the world, and we don't want to, but we definitely build the best EV driving cars in the world, and I bet I have everything on it, or I have done that, but people get out of our cars and go, wow, rear-wheel drive, engaging steering. It's like driving a Mark 1 MX-5 when they first came out. It's not about 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I turn it off on my Tesla because it's after a bit, you just don't want it. But the feel to still be able rear-wheel drive and go into a corner and enjoy it without, you know, killing anyone because you're doing a Mach 19 speed down the motorway once. People have forgotten about driver engagements. So some of the guys I've got here, XF1, the suspension setup and how the vehicle feels for us is more important than the EV, because anyone can build an EV car, and you can see it in some of the conversions. We'll just put this, that, and there. No one talks about weight distribution, power to weight. No one talks about how does it handle. If you go and look at our vehicles from people who have them on TV, they go, wow, the handling, the balance. What you have in a I nearly said another name then, but mainstream EV vehicles is all your batteries in the bottom, exactly the same as a van, an electric van. And you've got that flat floor driving experience where the computer's trying to add some fun into it. You know, you're just driving around in flat floor, boring driving cars, but you can go 0-60 in 3 seconds. But that's not what driving's about. You know, why is the Mini the greatest car to drive down a country lane, in my opinion? Because at 30 mile an hour, you feel engaged and you can feel the road and you're enjoying it. We've created that in EV. No one else has done it in a new car. So I'd say we've got a niche market, but our market is for people that like driving cars. Other EVs are for people that like being driven by the car, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's one thing I have noticed as well, like especially if you see any sort of electric car advert on the TV, the only things they want to talk about is the range on it, how fast it can charge, or the 0-60. But like you said, once you've done 0-60 once, you go, oh, that was cool. But then you're looking for something else then, aren't you?
How do you do that in the city? And more importantly, if you're going down a country lane, I can tell you now, I like Fiat 500s, the old ones, etc. I haven't driven the new electric one, although I do want to get driving. I think they're lovely looking cars. I had a little Fiat 500 at Bath, right? At the same time, I had a Maserati and some other modern vehicles. And I live in the countryside, and I'm not reckless, a reckless driver, although everybody who listens to this drives too fast. We're all guilty of that. But driving too fast in my little Fiat 500 was probably 20% above the speed limit, which I appreciate I shouldn't do. But God, I felt engaged. Impossible to do that in the Maserati. Because if I want to get that same thrill, I'm now going at a speed that if something pulls out or there's a cyclist, of course, you know, I'm being very, very reckless. And that's a bit the same with our vehicles and, say, a Tesla S or a Porsche. To get the thrill of speed, the way those cars are engineered, you know, 100 mile an hour instantly, and yeah, this is my little bit of fun. Well, that's not ethical. You can get the same fun in our vehicle at 50 miles an hour because of the engagement. You're close to the road, rear-wheel drive, and it's safer to do it that way. You know, and I think there's a problem all over the world with the way we've manufactured cars. I mean, my daughters are, well, 28 and 25, but they both had Fiat 500s. I bought them when they were 17. And what struck me was at 50 mile an hour, you didn't feel like you were moving. Now, we've built that into vehicles. I'm not sure that's a good thing. We've built out the sense of speed, especially in my Tesla. It's lovely, quiet. Before you know it, you have to keep your eye on the speed. Like you just, but we've got to stop these vehicles. We've got to have the same reaction time if someone steps out. So I think our vehicles are perfect for engagement, for being ethical, for giving someone a thrill without saying the thrill is doing 150 mile an hour in 10 seconds. And we've got to get our heads around that. If you want a driver's car, which is engaging in a country lane and fun, don't go 0-60 in 3 seconds.
Yeah, how have you created that driver engagement? Because you've spoken about the testing cycle and the sort of manufacturing process, but it's something that's troubled other manufacturers, other EV, other automotive companies as well, to get that real sense of driver engagement. So how have you sort of created that?
Because we sit in a gap between converters and OEMs. OEMs can't do what we've done because you're not going to sell thousands of our vehicles, you know? We hope to sell. We've got 72 to build next year, you know, and we've got orders into the following year, so things are bright for us. But we've created it with our frame system. But let's not forget what these OEMs have done. Their safety is incredible. You know, we don't have crumple zones. We're using old body styles, aren't we? So we don't. We can't. Even if we wanted to, I wouldn't let our cars go that fast. I've got a race one downstairs, which is quick. We tone it all down because we have to be responsible. You know, these old body shells haven't been through the same design for crash as the new ones. So, and then again, one of my big arguments with the converters, you know, there's a guy out there, companies you will know, who's got a Land Rover conversion, 0-60 in 4.3 seconds. It's a 1972 Land Rover. I nearly swore that on your podcast. I apologize. But how do you stop that if a kid steps out in the road? How do you stop that two and a half ton? And what happens to being responsible? So OEMs are very responsible on safety, but because of their market, they can't manufacture like we do. You know, we're hoping to just 300 or 400 cars a year with different vehicles. We're the fun side of it, but I'm not knocking the OEMs at all, but they wouldn't drive their mainstream vehicles, just rear-wheel drive without all the sensors that they have compared to us. Would not get them the mass market appeal. Don't forget, we're different, you're different, we love cars. 85% of the people out there, a car is a functional thing. So I'm in the bit that loves cars. The OEMs have to really sell to the other 85%.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just wondering, I know we've sort of danced around the subject for a little while, but could you just give us a sort of broad overview of the cars that you do manufacture, the car that you said that...
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment, we have the RBW Roadster. So I'm doing the challenge Anik a bit now. So we have the RBW Roadster and the RBW GT. The GT we launched on the 14th of December. We've just concentrated on the Roadster. We've got other vehicles coming, but our business is very much going forward about not just building vehicles for clients, but giving our system out for other people. So you can see these are hand-built. So this is our leather guy here. So we're bringing everything in-house. Say hello, Andrew. There you go.
Hello.
Everything is hand-built here. So it's a hand... Oh, it's very quirky. It's a hand-built electric car. And if you try and explain that to people, it really sends them a bit mad, if you know. You can see what we're doing here. I'll take you down. So at the moment, we started with our Roadster, and we thought if we can sell a few, we'll go to something else. We can't go to something else at the moment because we sold so many, which is a really nice problem. And sticking to the knitting is a good thing to do. So our models at the moment are the Roadster. Here's one in build here. They go with the Pulse system here. So eventually, by mid next year, we'll get 6 new cars out a month. And this is the GT, which has just been launched for us. So we think this will be a good seller for us, the GT. Obviously, our traditional battery box. It's a lovely car. And then we've got clients' cars in for service, as you can see. A prototype area and one of our older cars over there, which does lots of miles. Then I've got two other workshops that do the body in white and the paint. And then because we've got so many, we have to store. So we've got we seem to be growing body shells. I've got about over 40. So that's the raw product that comes in. And then we see it painted, and it arrives then in its stage one build, as you can see on the ramp here. Once it's been in our other factory, then it follows round to be electrified and have the interior put in. Our clients picked from 300 leathers. If I knew what I knew now, I'd have just done 12, but we went with have what you want. And the same with colours. And then, of course, the bit that people really like to have a bit of fun with. And we've got some open days next year where we've got a test track by us and people can come and drive, is when we do this sort of thing. So this is, you may have seen this on TV. We think there's a market for a full EV race series, you know. It's got full roll cage and everything you'd want in a race car, etc. But we just haven't got time at the moment.
we're going to need an invite down to test one of those, because it's the worst sort of teasing now, just being on Zoom with you and looking at those and not being able to drive one.
So we're a friendly company, come any time. And then if I take you through to design offices, all the meeting upstairs, but you can see we've got our design offices here, which are great, really. So these guys are very experienced in what they do. The only bit I love the bit is the electric desks. Who knew you could do this with a desk? You know? So apparently that's what you need in design. And then we come through to sales, accounts, and the rest of our business, which is here. There you go. So that's very much us. And when you go back to passion about cars, you'll probably see that behind me better. You can see my helmets, trophies. That's my son's racing, so he's 15. He races in Fiesta and was in karting. So I'm not sure it's a business or a passion, or both.
Yeah, so it's a hobby that's got out of hand. But you mentioned you've got your new factory now, which you moved into recently. I was just wondering if you could give us a bit of an overview of how the company has grown in the last couple of years and the sort of size and scale of operations at the moment.
Yeah, so the company, we got to a certain stage, and I don't know if you've heard of it, but something came along called COVID. And that really didn't help us at all. We had a mature product then, so we just we dumbed down and protected the business. And then on the back of selling more cars, dealers, we ended up going out to market and attracted investment, which has allowed us to scale now. It's took me a lot longer than other companies would, but I think I've tried to explain. We wanted to be in a position where we were coming from a position of strength with an order book, with a proven product, with all our safety standards. So we achieved that, and that's allowed us to open this facility. I've still got my body in white facility. We've taken on 22 people in the last 3 months. We'll have about 118 people within 12 months. And that's it, really. It's evolving. We have a business plan. We know how many vehicles we've sold out for next year. We know where we want to take it. We're going to start manufacturing more vehicles, maybe some different styles vehicles, which I can't disclose, and providing that patented system to other companies.
And just on the subject of that, I know, like you said, you can't disclose certain things, but and I appreciate this is the million-dollar question, but what is the end goal for RBW? I don't know if you have one, but what does the short-term and the long-term goal for you guys?
Total world domination. I think the first thing is, I wasn't very well when I started this business. And that's why I left the other one. So I've learned that, you know, it's not just about money, you know. I get extremely pissed off, and I'm sorry for about that, with the fact that my father is probably one of the most skilled people I know. And at 90 years old, he hand turns out a solid some of the dials in our vehicles. My father's a skilled tradesman that never had a brand new car. He went through IMI, Imperial Metal Industries, all his life in the same factory, and was not treated or respected as many of the tradespeople I know. I'm an electrician by trade. But our next door neighbour, who's an insurance broker, always had a brand new car. Now, if you turn on his head and go to the United States, where my father's best friend went doing the same job, he had a new car every year. He was a tradesman. He got respected. So what's the goal? I want to create some very talented jobs. I want people to start believing that the British are the best at industry, because we are. We're not the best at productionising it, and we're going to change that. But the goal isn't money. Yes, we want to be profitable and successful. But, you know, it's about time we started saying we are very good at what we do. We can create some good jobs, and we can, with our patented system, we're going into the States next year, create some real good market for our business. But along the way, I've just done a deal with our local college to bring apprentices in. That's the exciting bit. You know, I'm an old git, really. I'm 55, but, you know, my son's 15, my daughters are there, and we're brilliant at engineering, but engineering has been so unfashionable and a low-skilled job. Why? That's more of a political question, I would say. We're going to the States now, to the US. We're opening a facility there. The amount of help to get into the States, oh, my gosh. You can tell why they've got the growth and we haven't here, to try and get any help to get off the ground from the government. Ridiculous. Now, listen, we're a small economy, but we think small. We're not joined up. So what's the goal? I want to try and change on a very, very small scale the vision of, you know, engineering is a good thing. We are good at what we do. And if you come to work in my business or mine and my investors' businesses, I want people to enjoy it. You know, I've got clients coming in a minute, and it's the feel, you know, it's the feel of an inclusive, you know, fantastic business. And especially from Birmingham, we've got the most diverse cultures around us. It's a fantastic place to live. Our factory is fantastic. That's all diverse. It's just, so what do I want to do? Money. Yes, we'd like to make money and be profitable, but we've got to get our act together in the UK and say, you know, The apprentices and the young people, those are people that we want to see coming through. I've got an apprentice I started, Tom, downstairs. When I first started doing my classic business, and I put him through Walsall College, and he got all these qualifications. He's now quite well paid for his age at 22. I've had him 7 years. But he went into Continental and worked up there, learnt all the EV side. And I have to say, that gives me equally as much, when I see him put things, what he can do now, as much satisfaction as the actual cars. Because that's life-changing for him, isn't it? So I'm sorry if I sound like a politician. What's the goal? Great business, creating great jobs, making money, and great driving cars. That's enough, isn't it?
That's all for this episode. Many thanks for listening. And if you liked it, then please do check out all our other episodes. And be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to make sure you get every single episode as soon as it's released. For daily news coverage, features and much more, you can also head over to evpowered.co.uk. Thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you on the very next episode of the Everything EV podcast.